Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
American Glutton Podcast has a Patreon. Do you hate commercials? Well, we've got a Patreon. Do you want bonus episodes? That's on the Patreon. Do you want to hang out and chat in our Discord channel? That's part of the Patreon too. We even have an option where you can leave me voicemails, all on the Patreon. So check it out today, patreon.com/American Glutton. We have a Patreon.
Hi. I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment. Food as sport. Food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. American Glutton is brought to you by Trifecta. I used to sit and weigh and measure everything out, and I don't do that anymore. You know why I don't do that anymore? Because Trifecta does it for me. All my long, arduous Sunday spent on meal prep, I don't do that anymore because I get a big box of portioned, cooked food every week from them. And I don't have to get overly thoughtful about it. They have taken all that energy and done it for me. Thanks, Trifecta. Today on American Glutton, I'm talking to Daryl Edwards. He is the author of the best-selling book, Animal Moves. You can find him on Instagram, at Fitness Explorer, or on his website, primalplay.com. Daryl Edwards, welcome to the American Glutton podcast.
Glad to be here.
I'm really interested in Animal Moves and your whole theory and practice in general. I went from being very sedentary for most of my life. In fact, making all calculations for my life about conservation of energy because I was very overweight and any kind of movement was a huge struggle. When I finally lost the weight, I still had that kind of mindset. So I would find myself trying to utterly conserve energy and move as little as possible. So I have to fight against that in the same way that I have to fight against my what I want to eat, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm just totally fascinated by your whole ideas. Like, what are your thoughts on this, on movement?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing I really want to comment on is your point around the conservation of energy. And we know much of the messaging around weight loss tends to be eat less, move more. And the biggest problem with that is not so much the debates around how effective exercise can or can't be for weight loss or body composition. The real issue is it ignores our biology. In the sense that we evolved, we're here, and part of the reason we're here is because we seek out convenience.
Right.
And we make decisions based on what we need to do to survive. So if we don't need to be active, i.e. I don't need to go out and hunt and gather food, I'm very happy in my cave, you know, not doing very much because I don't need to expend energy. I'm making a better decision by conserving energy. And so in the 21st century, where food is obviously far more convenient, where we have many more options in terms of locomotion and labor-saving devices, even though our biology is telling us conserve energy, access food when it's available, move less because we don't have to, I can get something to do this for me. That's why many of us have a problem. And it isn't just down to willpower alone. If it was, many of us would be successful in terms of managing our body composition. That fight you described is the fight of our DNA. It's a fight of our cells telling us, relax.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to move right now. Why are you making this decision to move arbitrarily? Even exercise, you know, exercise is an arbitrary decision in order to get more physical activity in, right? I have to say to my, you know, my brain has to say, hey, do you want to do some movement now? Not really. Well, you should do because it's good for you. So let's do some movement. And when we do this movement, let's do it in a very structured, organized way. And we use this term exercise. And in doing so, we'll achieve our objectives. So in my case, I want to lose weight. I want to improve my body composition. Let me do this thing called exercise. So imagine your body's screaming at you every single second of that block of time that you're exercising, saying, you don't really need to be doing this. It's uncomfortable. Why are you expending calories unnecessarily? Do you really know where your next meal is coming from? We don't know. You may do, but we don't. So that's why our bodies feel so good when we're sedentary, when we're comfortable. And even though we know that there are the benefits of exercise, even though we know we feel better post-exercise, getting to the starting line is really, really difficult.
Yeah.
And in terms of myself, I used to believe it was all about individual responsibility, personal responsibility. It's easy to make the right decision if you're just dedicated enough, if you're disciplined enough. But I now understand it isn't just about discipline, because even when I was the most dedicated to improving my health and transforming my health, I still found it difficult getting out of my chair. You know, I was got the gym membership, started the diet that was working well for me, religiously in the gym 5-6 days a week, doing the work, feeling great about it. But on the Monday, I was always like, do I really want to go to the gym today?
Right.
I have to have this conversation with myself and go, of course you have to, Daryl, because that's the right thing to do. But it was never, I can't wait to hit the gym today. Every single day, every single session.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't joyful. And I suppose coming back to the original question of my approach to movement, I wanted to stop feeling dread when it came to embarking on a movement practice. I wanted to feel that movement or exercise was less of a chore. I wanted to experience some fun, some enjoyment. I wanted some passion. And the only people that I saw passionate about exercise were either professional athletes, you know, those who have addictive personalities, you know, like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get it done. Nothing's going to stand in my way. Highly competitive, those type of individuals. But for me, it was more about, I'm going to have to embrace discomfort for the next 45 minutes to an hour, and I'm going to give it all I can. But that can, for me, that could only work for a short period of time.
Well,
I want
to acknowledge your point and say I 100% experience everything you're talking about. I expected through weight loss to achieve a state of normalcy, what I deem normal. I feel like it's like a mean thing to pin this moniker of normalcy on people, like to say you're normal, and nobody really feels normal. But like what I perceived as normal, I expected to achieve that, you know, like Bodhi sitting under the tree achieved enlightenment. I expected to achieve normalcy through diet. Never happened, no matter how many times I lost weight, in whatever manner I lost weight. So for me, diet was the day that I realized, oh, this is going to be a lifelong pursuit, or I'm going to keep failing. And that's fine too, because I keep failing, I keep gaining weight back, and then I keep getting on diet. So I either go like, I'm just going to expect that, because I seem to find myself there without expecting it every time. Or I'm going to decide that I'll never achieve that quote unquote normalcy, and it will always be work. In the same way, I go to the gym 6 days a week, and I always walk out of the gym feeling dramatically better. And it's almost always a struggle for me to go into the gym. I wake up, I open my eyes in the morning, and I go like, I don't want to get out of bed, nothing about, and it's a battle to get myself to the gym. And I expected like, no, but I feel good leaving. Why is that not enough? It's just not enough.
It's not enough. Yeah. And I'm sure this resonates with the audience, because I too feel exactly the same way. If you look at my social media, or if people meet me for the first time, one of the questions they'll ask is, oh, Daryl, you're just moving all the time. I wish I could be like you. You just love exercise and you just... And I'm like, you do not understand. If there was a Sedentary Anonymous, right, I would be a member. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm addicted to sitting down, lying down, chilling out, not doing very much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whether it's listening to music, playing my Xbox, like I could do that pretty much forever. And not really complain about it. Like, this is life. This is great. You know, no worries, no concerns. Let me just get a few more points on this game, right? But I recognize, of course, sedentary behavior is one of the most harmful lifestyle choices that anyone can make, not just myself, right? It increases the risk of diabetes, dementia, you know, all whole host of conditions. It's impactful to our mental health. It accelerates the aging process. So there are so many reasons as to why moving is good for us. But as you said, the challenge is a starting point. What I would say is, again, our biology helps in the sense that the end of activity, the feel-good hormones that are activated, serotonin, endorphins, dopamine, the natural dopamine hit you get. Those are all signals telling our bodies, telling our mind, it's okay. And this is something you want to do again, right? Because you want this feeling again. So many of us will leave the gym going, yes, I feel great. Why did I have so much difficulty entering the gym? I can't wait to do this again, right? We have that. And many of us are able to repeat that cycle and that process. But when things go wrong, i.e. we go, you know what? I'm going to decide not to do this today. I believe I have one solution to this problem. And that is, if you can bring the feeling that you have at the end of your workout to the beginning of your workout, you're more likely to want to do it.
Right.
So analogous to me is, if I go out, you know, I'm celebration, you know, family celebration, and there's music on that I love, right? And I'm dancing for an hour. I'm like, oh my gosh, where's this energy coming from? I'm like shattered. I can't, you know, but you just keep going. I'm just playing. They're playing my tunes, tune again, again, and again. I realize that I don't feel great at the end. I feel great immediately.
Right.
And that continues all the way throughout. And I stop usually because I really am. There's nothing left. Right.
Yeah.
I'm too tired. I'm like, I just can't continue moving, or it's the end of the party. Right. And then not only have I felt great throughout, and I feel great at the end, and I'm also thinking, oh, I would love to do that again. But I realized the joy of embarking on that movement practice right from the first second, and that continuing, and me not thinking about sets or reps or total cardiovascular time or how intense this is or my heart rate monitoring, just that process of enjoyment helps me to sustain that, helps to maintain that act, and makes me want to do it again. So now I don't have any issues putting music on, and whereas before I'd probably just be put some music on and I'd be nostalgic. Oh, do you remember this band? Do you remember this song? Do you remember, oh, what it was like when I was going to the clubs? Wasn't that great back in the day? Now I can go, what am I talking about? Put the song on now. You know, no one's around. You can dance, you can have fun. You're not exercising. You're moving, and you're moving in a way that the body enjoys. So the runner's high, for example, you know, endorphins, right? So endorphins are a natural pain reliever. It's like an analgesic. And so when endorphins are released, they not only dampen pain down in the body, but they also do the same for the brain.
Yeah.
So the brain, there's a kind of state of euphoria. Our brain goes, wow, what a fantastic experience. Our bodies go, not so sore. That's not what we're focusing on. We're feeling good about what we've just done, about this level of exertion. Right. So that's what the endorphins do for us. But the runner's high, which is what it's termed as, it's at the end of the running process. I mean, you run your 10K, you run your half marathon, you run your marathon, and then you're like, yeah, wasn't that fantastic? But you've had to endure 2-3, however many hours of significant discomfort to get that glory at the end. And for me, it just doesn't make sense. It's irrational. And it's that sort of irrationality that only a child would understand.
Right.
So if you said to a child, hey, you know, let's just do something for the next 2 hours, 3 hours, and then right at the end, it's going to feel really great. Most kids would be like, no.
Yeah.
Right. Do I have to do this, mom or dad? No, you don't have to do it. Okay. In that case, I'm not going to do it.
Well, it's a version of the marshmallow experiment. Are you familiar with the marshmallow experiment?
I am. Yes.
Yeah, it's like that. And you think about that, and that's what I would say. Like for me, looking at that, I look at the kids who wait are the normal kids. But the reality is they're a far smaller group than the kids who can't wait. And I couldn't wait. So in fact, we're normal.
We're normal. Yeah. With that experiment, those kids, the minority of kids who can wait the minute or two, you know, they're looking at the marshmallow, they're looking at the waiting to see if somebody's going to count. You know, those kids are not, I wouldn't say they're normal.
No, I think those they're sociopaths, kids, honestly.
I totally agree. They're conditioned. They're socially conditioned. They're conforming to adult norms.
Yeah.
Whereas for most children, they want instant gratification, right? It's like, it's there. It's right in front of me. Why can't I eat that? Why can't I enjoy that marshmallow? Why wait 5 minutes?
Yeah.
What's that about? So of course, children have to learn, you know, that sometimes you have to rely on hard work. You've got to put some work in. You've got to study for exams. Not everything is instantaneous, right? That's the process of growing up and becoming an adult. But it's not a binary choice. And I think, unfortunately, for many adults and their experience of exercise, as we age, so for kids, their exercise is play, right? It's about having fun. You're outside with your friends, getting up to all sorts of mischief, especially back when I was a kid, right? Not so much similar now, but for my childhood, playtime was the most active time of pretty much my entire life, to be fair. But the most activity I got in my day was playing.
Yeah.
It wasn't physical education at school. It wasn't playing sports. It was everything but those two activities. As an adult, everything becomes physical education or exercise, maybe playing sports if I'm keen on doing so. But the joy of movement has been kind of like sucked out of us. You know, it's been suppressed out of us. And my journey started off trying to fall in love with exercise in my early 30s. So my 20s, I read all the magazines, I watched the movies, I wanted to have a bodybuilder physique. That was never going to happen. But that's what I wanted. So I'd join the gym. I'd go to the gym. I'd try all the different workouts, get a six pack in 4 weeks, blah, 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 blah. Eat this diet. It's going to happen. Of course, didn't happen. Or sometimes, you know, it would happen for maybe half a second, but it wasn't sustainable. I couldn't maintain it. It was just hard work. I felt I didn't have the discipline. In my 30s, when I started encountering health issues, and I realized movement is now essential. It's not about aesthetics. It's about me sorting out my health and me dealing with pre-diabetes and high blood pressure and high risk of a heart disease or a stroke. I was like, I need to get some exercise in. So I went back to the gym. I realized I was more keen on following a program because I noticed that the outcome was going to be better health. So as I was enthusiastic, I was like an evangelist telling people, yes, I'm in the gym. I'm like, yeah. I schedule it in every day. I'm like, it's important to me. You need to be doing the same thing. But I hit a brick wall and it was incredible. I hit the brick wall when I was probably at the peak of my physical fitness, when I was enjoying it the most, when I felt great about being ultra competitive about what I was doing. And then I hit a brick wall, and that brick wall was just, oh, I'm just not enjoying this. I'm looking at my watch all of the time. I start the session and I'm like, oh, I've got an hour to go. You know, just got to get through this. I've got to get through this. And I had a eureka moment. And that eureka moment was, when was the last time you enjoyed movement? Like really enjoyed it. Wasn't watching the clock. When hours felt like minutes, you know, or minutes felt like hours.
Yeah.
And in a good way, right? And it was like, it was when I was a kid. It was when I was playing. It was when I was playing outside. And I was like, how could I recapture this as an adult? What can I do to not become a child again, but to sort of embrace my inner child? And that's how Primal Play began. It was having that thought, making that decision, prioritizing play. And it was a very difficult transition. It wasn't an overnight change. It took a lot for me to go from, it's all sets and reps, it's all hard work, dropping dumbbells on the floor, you know, like, you know, doing box jumps and all the things I was doing back then. It was like, how can I embrace play? How can I spend more time outdoors? How do I find other people who may want to do this with me? You know what I mean? I don't be playing by myself. Like, I, you know, so that took a few years for me to establish that state of mind for myself and to make decisions around, okay, I want to play, I want to have fun, but I want it to be meaningful because I do want to have all of those health benefits. You know, I do want to maintain and build strength. I do want to improve cardiovascular fitness. I do want to maintain good mental health. I do want to build bone density. I want to maintain lean body mass. So there were all these kind of adult requirements, but I wanted my childlike self to be able to access all of those.
Yeah.
So I realized the science was just as important as the experience.
I mean, that's amazing. So my mind automatically goes to, because I'm now at the point where I'm like doing cardio every day and totally looking down at the clock and disappointed every time I look and just like, mm-hmm. Oh God, it's going so slowly. And then I have my workouts, which are based more on workload than time. So I have a certain amount I have to get done. And honestly, it's kind of the bare minimum that I feel I have to do just to maintain muscle mass. Right. So I'm not trying to put on muscle. I just want to be able to have the muscle as basically, you know, a carbohydrate yes. sink. You know what I mean?
Yes, 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 yes.
And just, you know, at all the stuff I've looked at, it looks like the more muscle mass we can carry into older age, the better off we are, the more longevity we have. But sure. It is work. It isn't. There's no sense of me that looks forward to this in the morning. And yet I feel great afterwards every yes. time.
Yes.
When you're talking about making it fun, see, because my mind automatically goes to, how do you know you're getting everything done? If it's just fun, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
If you said just have fun in the gym, I don't know that I'm for sure getting all my work done.
Yes. And that's a dilemma for sure. Because if I just think fun, if I just think, hey, somebody's saying, hey, just play more. What I imagine are people kind of blowing up balloons and popping them, rolling down the hill, kind of like jumping around laughing. That's the image that comes to my mind.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm sure lots of people have their own versions of like, hey, just go out and play. You know, there's like laughter, yoga, and you know, there's all these things where it's just about having fun. But the downside is you're not achieving the benefits of improving my cardiovascular fitness, where you have to work usually 65 to 85% minimum. And you're gonna have to spend some time, if you really want to push, over 85% to really maximize the benefit, right? To improve your cardiovascular conditioning, to increase your lung function, to improve your body's ability to process oxygen, right? So me rolling down the hill, me blowing balloons, laughing, not really going to help in that respect, right? Maintaining muscle mass or building muscle mass, you have to work the major muscle groups. You can do body weight, but you have to make sure the resistance is enough work to be able to give your body the signals, your muscles the signals that I need to get stronger,
right?
I need to get bigger, I need to get stronger tendons and ligaments to support this. I need to have enough weight bearing activity to strengthen my musculoskeletal system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So that work has to happen. And that's why we have workouts.
Right.
So with Primal Play, there are three pillars to Primal Play.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Growing up as a kid, my mom would never let us have real cereal. When I say real cereal, I mean the stuff that you'd find at a normal grocery store. My mom would get us the cardboard shavings at the health food store, and I was always miserable with my cereal. And then I would magically go to my friend's house, and they would have real cereal. And I would be so envious, and I would sit and eat bowl after bowl of delicious frosted goodness, sugary, wonderful stuff. And then I grew up and I was able to buy my own cereal, but that lasted all of 2 minutes because then I started dieting. So cereal left my life entirely. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Now there's Magic Spoon, which is high protein cereal. My favorite flavor is their peanut butter. It's incredible. Variety pack. Four flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free. It's incredible. Go to magicspoon.com/glutton and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GLUTTON at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/glutton and use the code GLUTTON to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
So one part of Primal Play is the play psychology, which is about the experience, which is about the fun, which is about the joy, which is about, you know, feeling great about what you're doing, it being sustainable, you wanting to do it forever, right? You wanting to go back and repeat it again and again and again. That's a play psychology, and having strategies to make informed decisions around how I can have fun with movement. But the other two pillars, one is evolutionary biology and one is exercise science. Right. So the evolutionary biology kind of tells us what our primal beings are, how we should be moving, what sort of movement patterns we should be doing, which model what humans have always done. So when humans were here, Homo sapiens were first here, what sort of movements did they do to maintain their life on the planet, basically, right? Building, walking, running, lifting, carrying, jumping, crawling. There were all these movement patterns that they engaged in. But again, if you think about that, it's still kind of work, right? It's challenging, it's difficult.
I mean, especially since we no longer have to do that, right?
We don't have to do that.
It's a weird time we find ourselves in. We're like, we're having a conversation, I believe, across an ocean, which is crazy. Yes. And like, we can get our food without getting out of bed, and we can be entertained all day. We don't have to do any of this stuff.
We don't have to do any of that stuff. But the good thing is, and this is talking about the third pillar of Primal Play, the Primal Play method, is we have the exercise science. So the exercise science tells us how exercise, how movement affects our physiology. So what stimulus do I need to elicit, you know, increased bone mineral density? What stimulus do I need to start maintaining and building muscle mass and reducing visceral fat around the middle? What intensity do I need to work at to improve my cardiovascular fitness? So once you can marry the play psychology with the exercise science, then you can be informed about why this is beneficial. So I'll give you a very simple example, because people always say, well, give us an example. What do you, you know, what does that mean? An example is when I'll mention this about my brother, 2 years younger than I, right? We shared the same room. We played a lot when we were kids. And there was a time where, as the older brother, I was like, yeah, I can pick you up. I can piggyback carry you, right? And I can carry you, can run, can like, and he couldn't do the same to me, right? He wasn't strong enough. He wasn't old enough. But then there came a point in time when he was just like, I'm strong enough now. So at a very young age, 6, 7, whatever it was for him, he was able to lift more than his body weight onto his spine. And not just lift, he was able to carry me for a significant distance. So if you just look at those two activities, lifting, carrying, locomotion, and you transfer that to an adult doing exactly the same thing, right? They piggyback carry. Let's say body weight or somebody a little bit smaller than them or heavier than them. That's a significant amount of mass. Yeah. That they're adding to their body, right? It's in some cases it's more mass than they would actually be back squatting in the gym,
right?
So in my groups, I've had people in my groups who don't do any weight training, you know, who was concerned about lifting weight, if don't feel strong enough, but they'll be happy to piggyback carry. And when you explain to them, if you went to the gym, you might be given just a barbell, you know, 15 kilos. Barbell to put on your back to, like, you know, just do air squats, you know, just so you can get used to the movement. You know, injuries, we're really concerned about that. But they can have somebody who weighs like, you know, 150 pounds jump onto their back and with a smile on their face that can carry these individuals. So
no, but it's very strange, yeah. Daryl, because as I'm picturing it, I can back squat my weight. That's fine, but it's heavy. And it and I have to really make sure my feet are in the right position and that my breath is held and that my hip is underneath, there's a lot to do. And if I picture one of my friends jumping on my back to give me a piggyback ride, I'm not doing any of that. And I'm not apprehensive that I'm going to hurt myself either.
Yes, exactly. That's the point, because, one, I think there's muscle memory. So many of us can remember piggybacking someone as a kid, right? I think most of us have had that experience. It's a universal movement pattern. And secondly, it's because your brain is switching off from working out, feet placement, got to keep my heels on the ground, got to make sure I've got a neutral spine, got to make sure I'm looking in the right place. Like, there are all these rules and regulations which are really important if you're performing that activity to be able to deliver perfect form. However, most of humanity, everything we see, everything in nature is imperfect, right? Every cycle we see, every form that we see, there is nothing which is perfect. However, in exercise, we do gravitate towards this idea of perfection, but most movement is not perfect. No, most movement is imbalanced.
I have to say something to that too. The scariest thing for me in my real life is my wife asking me to move something. And it's so weird because in the gym, I pick up heavy things all day, heavy, much heavier than anything my wife, but I've hurt myself a number of times where she's like, can you move this chair to the other room or take it upstairs or something? And I'm like, yeah, sure. That's much lighter than stuff I'm doing in the gym. And somehow I'll tweak my back or hurt a hamstring or hurt my bicep or whatever it is. And I'm often like, how am I a big, strong guy? But I'm like hurting myself doing really not heavy stuff, light stuff around my house.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. We have so many parallels, because another eureka moment for me was I was doing a lot of deadlifting, barbell deadlifts. And, I got to 1x body weight. I got to 2x body weight. I got to 2.5x body weight. But that was the goal that I was set. So I was lifting I went well over 500 pounds to give you an idea, right? Yeah. So I was seriously, seriously heavy lifting. And I remember thinking, my back is so strong. I've always had a weak back. Now I'm strong. And I remember once, reaching down to pick something up, back went.
Yeah, like something that's 5 pounds can throw my back out, but I can easily deadlift a lot. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy, yeah. Tying a shoelace. I remember tying my shoelace once really quickly. I went down. Oh, back's gone. Oh, my goodness, right? I realized, again, it took me a long time to realize. I saw lots of specialists and they gave me all these reasons as to why, tight hamstrings, do some more stretches. I realized what the problem was. If you think about any exercise you do, what we want from that exercise is a physical stressor. We want adaptation based on that demand. And then we want the ability to repeat that action. And sometimes, if possible, we want to increase that demand, i.e. increase that load, so we get stronger in doing so. The downside is you kind of get stronger doing that movement pattern. So this strictness of form for particular exercises, like the deadlift, like a back squat, which are functional movement patterns, but they're straight up and down. And as humans, Even if I sit down and stand straight up, I still have some rotation. I still have some lateral movement. I'm not an android. It's impossible for me to perfectly go from sitting position to standing, or from a top of a squat to a bottom, or from a top of a deadlift down to the floor. It's impossible for me to perfectly go in one plane of motion.
Yeah.
We're three-dimensional creatures. And for me, realizing that these movement patterns that we were evolved under, the conditions we were involved under, meant if I was picking up something from the ground, it'd be very unlikely I would just go straight down, you know, pick up this object, stand straight up, walk in a straight line to wherever I needed to, and set it back down. I'd be lopsided.
Yeah.
You know, you'd do whatever you could to manipulate that object. So I stopped doing maximal deadlifts and I started doing lots more rotational work and lateral work. And I changed my back squat position, like bodyweight squats, to like all types of different squat movement patterns. Then my back became stronger. So I went from somebody who had, let's say, 2 to 3 episodes a year of chronic back pain, started exercising, then got maybe 1 every 12 to 18 months when I was really strong, to now pretty much never having those episodes of low back pain.
Oh, wow.
And it's just that adaptation. So the adaptation for me saying, my back doesn't just do this. My back also twists and rotates. And for many people, they have this back twinge when they're adding some rotation to their spine and their spine going, you never ever do this.
Right. This is not what we do. You know what I mean? What are you doing? Yeah, this is
what
crazy.
Are you doing?
Moving like this.
Yeah, moving like this. What the heck are you doing? And that's why we get those muscle spasms and we have these kind of, our body basically trying to protect us, going, oh, no, don't do that again. I need to stay in this position for a few days. So I realize that not only are we in this sedentary world where we've outsourced physical activity, right? It's outsourced to our cars, our like public transport, the lifts that we can use rather than taking the stairs. There's an option available to us for movement that we can decide, do we move or not? But there's another problem, which is even when we decide to partake in movement or exercise, for most of us, we stick to these very rigid, we either use equipment. So again, you know, imagine you're doing a shoulder press in the gym and you decide to use a machine. You know, it makes it safer. It's I can sit down, it's more comfortable. And then you're pressing up this weight and it's like just in a straight line. And you keep on doing that. And your arms are in the same position, your wrists are in the same position, you're adding more weight and you go, oh wow, my shoulders are getting stronger. I started with 20 pounds, now 40, now 60, now 80. My shoulders are strong. You go out at the weekend, you throw a ball around. Oh, you know, shoulders gone, dislocated.
Dude, I like tweaked my upper bicep tendon just having a race with my kid in the pool, swimming, tweaked my upper bicep tendon where I just like, she was like, okay, let's race. I said, great, this is going to be fun. Ready, set, go. And I just threw my arm over and it didn't tear or anything, but like I've been in pain for 4 months because of this one thing that was no excess weight at all. You know?
Yeah. No, it's, you know, I often term movement as medicine. I coined that term many years ago because I believe it is.
Yeah.
But I also look at movement as, you know, the word diet, for example, comes from the word dieter, which I think was Greek. And dieter means lifestyle, right? It isn't just nutrition. And so if you think about what we're doing as in terms of improving our lifestyle and exercise being one part of that, think about nutrition. Many people will advocate the broadest, you know, food options will improve your likelihood of nutrition, nutritional density. Right? Don't just eat one thing. Eat lots of different stuff. Get your proteins, get your carbs, get your healthy fats, you know, have some variety, improve your microbiome, boom, boom, but there's all of that big picture stuff, right? With exercise, it's just down to, have you done your cardio? Do some weights every now and again. Don't really like cardio. I'm just going to stick to my weights. Don't really like weights. I'm going to stick to my cardio. You know what? Don't want to do endurance. I'm going to do some HIIT. Oh, no, HIIT's not good for me because my joints. I'm just going to do cardio, just going to get on the bike. Actually, biking is not enough. I want to run as well. and swim. So yeah, I'm really fit. I can bike, swim, run. I can do that for 15 miles. I'm amazing. But there's all these deficiencies that occur in terms of fitness. So we know really well, you know, we can diagnose somebody and say, oh yeah, you're deficient in vitamin D. You know, you don't have enough iron in your diet. But we almost need to do the same for people with movement.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with my clients, I can say to them, you know what, you're moving in the sagittal plane too much. So sagittal plane is basically like up and down, forwards, back. You know, you're moving like an android, right? You need some more variety. Well, what do you mean? Okay, you want some rotation, you want some side to side movement. You want to add that to your movement diet, right? You're running all the time. You know what? You need to do some resistance training because that's going to help you run. Really? Yeah, because you're going to have stronger legs, you're going to have stronger tendons, you're less likely to get injured, you can improve your core stability, you're going to have faster finishes, right? So you're almost saying to people, improve your movement diet by adding in those characteristics which you're neglecting. And we have to see movement in that way, because otherwise people will move. They'll do certain aspects of movement like, yeah, I'm in the gym, I'm deadlifting, I'm getting strong. And then they'll tweak something. Like you say, you pick up your daughter, you're playing with her and it's like, oh, my back's gone. And she's like, hold on a second, I thought dad was strong. He's like, you know, like he can't get out of bed because he's in pain. So, you know, another story I have to add to that is, I remember once going to visit an old girlfriend's partner, an old girlfriend's father on a farm. And I remember thinking, yeah, you know, I'm feeling good about helping out.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said to me, you know, you're a city boy. He went, we have lots of people like you coming to the farm, looking good, looking in shape, right? Lifting stuff in the gym. It's different out here in the country. And I remember thinking, yeah, whatever. I'm really strong. And this guy, much older than me, you know, and I was like, I did everything to dig in. I was like, yeah, I'm going to dig in. I was ruined. Yeah. 15, 20 minutes. I was ruined. And again, that was another valuable lesson to me. And at the end of it, he was just like, you're gym strong.
It's totally different. Yeah, it really is totally different.
It's totally different. You're gym strong. I'm functionally strong. I can do all the things that I've taught my body over many, many years. Again, I didn't just take that, you know, I didn't regret the decision of going all in, because it made me realize that whatever I was doing, I was neglecting a significant part of my movement diet. I did go back. I went back a few years later and I was there with him the whole day.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? I was like, and again, it was good proof of the pudding. Like, yeah, now I'm doing more functional movement.
Well, it's also very interesting what you're saying, because like I've had a number of evolutions and it mostly was just not knowing how to get to where I wanted to get, and then not even really knowing where I wanted to get, just knowing I wasn't happy where I was. So I went I had a cardio phase where it was cardio all day, every day, no resistance training. That wasn't great. Then I had a CrossFit phase, which I got injured a couple of different ways, and I just couldn't exercise. And I was like, well, that's not good for me. Yeah. And then it was strictly weightlifting. And you know, now I've recently started going, because I have had a couple, not injuries, but a couple of little instances where I went like, that thing shouldn't have hurt me, right? And it did. Mm. And I wouldn't call it an injury, but it was painful and kind of like altered the way I worked out for a little while. Yes. And so I've started to go to like yoga, just looking for more flexibility and more mobility, and I hate it. I hate it. So like the thing that you're saying that's most interesting to me is like this very useful form of exercise that's also fun, that doesn't, like, because I'll go to yoga twice a week, but it is a fight, you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
I'm looking for reasons to get out of it, and I'm taking reasons to get out of it. And so I'm really going half the time that I should be going. Anyway, I'm interested in what you're talking about. And I can't wait to look at your book and go on your website, simply because if there is a way to get some of this, which I want that ability to have a race with my kid in the pool and not, you know, be unable to do a pec deck because my upper bicep tendon is inflamed.
That shouldn't happen. I mean, again,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And if it's not a chore, that's icing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. In some respects, in the book Animal Moves and on my website, I discuss this process of, in some respects, some of this journey is individual. It's personalized, right? You have to define what is fun for you. But we also have, again, because of our history, human history, many of the things that kids play, the games they play, it's universal. You know, like if there were some kids born that had never seen any outside influence ever, they would definitely be playing tag. You know, chasing games, climbing trees, throwing games, crawling games, jumping, carrying. They would do all of these movement patterns, right? And other kids would be able to see those kids and go, yeah, we play most of those games.
Right.
And that's what I feel is missing for many of us as adults, is that we're hemmed in to a very refined, and again, similar to kind of dietary terms, you know, many of us have a refined movement diet, right? It's like, whereas we want a whole kind of, I don't want to say grains, but we want like a whole movement diet, yeah. Right? Where it's like, it's not good enough just to eat avocados and expect everything to be fine, or just to eat, you know, lamb's liver and it's all good. Like, no, you need to eat lots of different foods, and we need to do lots of different movement patterns. And there is a way to do that, which is fun and engaging. And it doesn't mean it's not challenging.
Sure.
It doesn't mean it's not comfortable, because again, looking at children playing, and even that, it's bizarre, because oftentimes if somebody said to me, oh yeah, what's it like watching kids play, without really thinking about it, just being superficial, I'd say, yeah, they're just always having fun, laughing. You know, it's just like, but actually most of the time they're serious. You know, they're deep in thought. It's hard, you know, it's hard work.
Yeah.
But they're so enthusiastic about achieving that. You know, imagine you're being sprinted down. Somebody's sprinting after you to try and tag you, right? You're going 100% effort.
Yeah.
You only stop either because you want to be tagged so you can start chasing, or because you can't run anymore.
Yeah.
So that's 100% effort. The difference is, they're probably laughing whilst they're doing it, or they're going, I don't want to get caught. You know, like there's almost like a morbid fear at that time. Whereas for us, for adults, we just go, it's pain. It's uncomfortable. Why am I doing this? And that's kind of the difference in mindset and mentality. I would love to say in my book, Animal Moves, it's all so easy,
right?
Like rolling down the hill and blowing at balloons and popping them, you know, but it's not like that. Some of the movement patterns are really difficult and challenging, but I try to sprinkle some play dust to make people go, hey, here's a way that you can make this more appetizing. Here's how you can make this process more fun. So I don't want to do burpees all day as my only way to like do HIIT training. I don't want to do yoga. I'm going to tell you straight. I can't stretch for a second.
It's not fun.
Not interesting.
Yeah.
No. But I do want to move with flexibility, with mobility, with youthfulness, right? With power, with grace, with strength, with good endurance. I want stamina. I want all of those things. But there's ways of getting it which don't have to be like, you know, you don't have to be filled with dread.
Yeah.
You know, and the last point to make on this is, if I go back to my childhood self, because when I started this journey, I used to say to myself, oh, I wish I was 10 years old again. Why, Darryl? Because do you remember how much energy you had? Do you remember how you could play all day? Do you remember? And I'm like, hold on a second. Can you imagine a lion, an adult lion, going, hey, I wish I was a cub again, you know, because I was so strong and had so much energy and so much speed. And like, no, the adult lion would be going, I wouldn't want to go back to that, because now I'm the most powerful, strong, fast, explosive, amazing creature when it comes to movement. And humans are probably the only creatures that have that discussion. Oh, do you remember when I was a preteen or when I was 14 years old? Before my prime, I was the strongest, fittest, most healthiest individual I ever was. Like, why is that our baseline? You know, why is it our benchmark?
Yeah.
So again, realizing that later in life, but I'm now in my 50s, and there's some things that I can do now I couldn't do in my 20s and 30s. And that's the reality. And it doesn't mean I'll be able to maintain that forever, but I'm still trying to push myself as if there's no ceiling, as if I, yeah.
Also, I just know that if I go back into sedentariness, then the future gets really dark, really quick.
Yes.
So like
very quick.
I'm a grandfather. I want to be, you know, by the time my grandchild is running around, I want to be running around with her and not like injured and sitting on the sidelines.
Yes. Yeah. That's a beautiful point. You know, why it's investing in your future.
Yeah.
Making these decisions, whatever may come your way, right? It's not going to make us bulletproof, invincible, but certainly what it does do, it's like an insurance policy, but it's insurance policy you're drawing on all of the time. That's the way I like to see it. So if nothing happens, you still benefit because you're in a much better position. If something does happen, you're in a much better position. So if you've got to take meds, you probably need to take less meds, right? If you're suffering with a condition, you're going to be having less side effects, having less symptoms in relation to that. If you have an injury, you're more likely to recover sooner. So it's one of the best things we can do for our health, mental, physical, emotional. And it's just a shame that most of the messaging we see around fitness are, you know, no pain, no gain. You know, my warm up is your workout. Like it's lots of posturing, it's lots of aesthetics again, so people don't feel as if they feel welcome. You know, many people don't go to the gym only because of the people within the gym.
Yeah,
that's it. You know,
not because I had to lose 150 pounds before I'd go into the gym, and even then I didn't feel comfortable and would work out with a trainer. And now I'm in the gym every day, and I would only say, like, if you're overweight, please come to the gym. You know what
yes,
I mean? Like that's,
please.
That's your spot.
Please do. And for those in the gym, make those people feel welcome.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Help them out. Like, don't make them feel as if they don't belong. And unfortunately, and I hold my hands up, I used to be one of those people who'd be like, beginners coming into my space,
right,
not knowing what they're doing, using my weights, you know, like, and it's unfortunate because now I realize being more inclusive, making fitness more accessible, giving people more options for them to move their bodies, it benefits us all. Because even if you think it's just about me, well, for me, it's like, no, it's not. It's about my kids. It's about my family. It's about those I love and care about. And so I want everyone to be able to share in this experience of being able to move more and to have more fun and to realize that they have, that everyone can be a superhero, right? Everyone can be as fast as they possibly can. Everyone can get stronger no matter what their position. They can get stronger than what they are now, you know, if they're living a sedentary existence, right? If they're physically inactive, everything you do is going to be of benefit, and you can build on that. You can take baby steps. So I feel privileged and honored to be able to share this message and to realize I don't want to cater to the elites. I don't want to sing to those, you know, who already understand this, the people who will go to the gym and do the work. my flock, so to speak, are those who are like, I would love to. I don't know how. I don't know what to do. Yeah. I'm not sure if this would count as exercise or not. And so I'm having some of my clients, they're achieving fantastic things through movement.
Yeah.
You know, they feel strong. They feel as if they have energy to do things that they couldn't previously. They feel more confident about their future in terms of longevity. And it's a wonderful industry to be in to be able to offer that.
I love it. I think it's a great message. I'm excited to do it too. Just to your...
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Point of, I'm not sure if this is considered exercise. I, like, when I was looking at where's the majority of expended energy is not in exercise, but throughout the rest of the day, I literally started doing, you know, talking with my hands more and tapping my feet more, just going like, that's going to help burn calories. So like, you know, it all counts. Any kind of movement is better than not movement.
Yes. No, totally. That's correct. And there is an expression called NEAT.
Yeah.
You know, which is non-exercise activity thermodynamics. So basically the movement you do when you're not exercising, when you're at rest, is usually the majority of your daily metabolic expenditure, energy expenditure. So if you fidget, if you're a person who, and I do that quite a bit, it's actually beneficial for you. But there's a downside to that. I've got to speak on the downside.
Okay.
The downside to that is, for most of us, if we just rely on NEAT alone,
yeah,
when many of us are consuming, you know, energy dense, like high calorie foods, and feel as if, oh well, I potter around all day, I'm good. Most of us have to do so much more on top of that, and it's not about the time you spend. It's about the type of activities you participate in. So NEAT is fantastic. But within that NEAT, make sure you're interspersing that with lots of activity. Because the sedentary time is the real danger, the blocks of sedentary time. So somebody, just to quote one study, so there's a study done on three types of groups of those studying, dealing with pre-diabetes, right? And wanting to manage their blood sugars. So they had one group who basically office jobs all day and just did their normal tasks, you know, walking back and to and from the toilet, that sort of thing, right? Going to lunch. The second group did 30 to 60 minutes of cardio at the end of the day. So, of course, that group had significant reductions in their blood sugar levels, you know, some of them coming off their meds, some of them, you know, no longer pre-diabetic just because of that 1 hour a day of movement. The third group did three blocks of exercise, one in the morning, one midday, one after lunch or late afternoon, right? they did 15 seconds of stair sprints. Okay. And the amazing thing about
15 seconds total.
Total. No, no. So 45 seconds total.
Okay.
Three times 15 seconds.
Okay. Times three. Of,
yeah. Sprinting, stair sprints, right? Flat out. So it's not like, yeah, I went for a little jog. It's like 100% effort, yeah. Right? Until I couldn't run anymore, sprint anymore. That third group actually had the most significant health benefits, reduction in risk of developing type 2 diabetes.
Oh, wow.
Improving their risk of coming off their meds. So just those 15 seconds blocks of activity made the most difference. So it's incredible how little time we need as long as the intensity is high enough. And there were lots of research papers on the benefits of this really ultra high intensity, maximal effort work, relatively short duration, having all of these remarkable benefits to our physiology. So yeah, so if there's any one takeaway from today, apart from making sure you have more fun with movement, the second is break up that sedentary time as much as possible throughout the day.
Right.
You know, take more regular walks, like, you know, get more water. So you've got to go to the water fountain more frequently. If you're having meetings with your colleagues, you know, make sure instead of sending them instant messages, go over to their desk, go to the toilet two floors up from where you normally sit. These things make a significant difference over and above just like fidgeting.
Yeah. Amazing. Daryl, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's been a fantastic podcast. Thanks so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. And now for the Q&A.
Here's a question from Matthew.
Hi, Matthew.
He says, I have been listening to you since the start and have to say that your advice, thoughts, and guests have greatly helped me overcome many negative self-thoughts and demons.
Thanks, Matthew.
However, I have many left to conquer. I, like you, have struggled with weight my entire life, along with a very negative self-image of my body. I've come a long way since then and have grown so much, but I still struggle with my self-image every day. Much like you, I won't take my shirt off at the beach or even in front of my beautiful wife. I don't want her to be embarrassed. I don't know why I'm still like this at 43. I'm an accomplished war veteran with over 4 combat deployments, as well as a 15-year veteran police officer, decorated several times for that. But I struggle with the poor self-confidence. How did you overcome this or keep it at bay?
Yeah. Thank you for this question. I don't think I overcame it. I think, though, that if you can manage to do one thing that makes you uncomfortable, like if you think of like whatever the thing that gives you the most anxiety or like would make you the most uncomfortable is, like I wouldn't even think about that, because for me that would have been something that I would have just put off doing forever if I was like, I want to figure out how to do that. So I would just start with much smaller things, and I would go like, you know, is there something that makes me terrifically uncomfortable that I think I could still do? And what would that be like? And then I did it, and it was not as bad as I imagined it would be. And then I can kind of built from there and did more and more uncomfortable things. And there are times when I'm feeling more confident and I'm like, nothing could make me feel uncomfortable, or, you know, I have self-confidence to defeat everything. And then that's not like permanently true. That's like fleeting. And I'll catch a glimpse of myself in a reflection on a mirror or walking by a store that's got reflective windows. And I'll go like, oh, that guy can't be confident. And it's all kind of ruined for a while. But I feel you. My self-confidence was basically debilitating as a kid, and it's not quite debilitating now. I'm still uncomfortable socially, but I'm managing much better.
Yeah, interesting that you say, you know, to sort of build on something, right? Like almost like start small and build on it. Is that what you mean? Like to do something that you like, just kind of get the guts up to do one thing that you feel
Yeah. And I also think like it could be interesting to take what you do as a law enforcement. Like for me, knocking on a stranger's door feels like, you know, as bad as taking my shirt off at a beach. Like I could never go knock on a stranger's door. But I imagine as a police person, you've had to do that a number of times. And so however you did that, so there's also this aspect where you could like look at stuff you have done and put that in contrast with stuff that you could posit that would make somebody terrifically uncomfortable. You know, foiling a crime might make a lot of people terribly uncomfortable, and yet that was your job, and so you did that. And so I would kind of maybe try to build your confidence psychologically through that kind of exercise of compare and contrast, and then pick something that you don't typically do because it makes you uncomfortable, and figure out some way in. And I promise you, once you get it done, unless it's a disaster, and then you're like, forget it. It was so bad. I was right. I don't need to do it. But I suspect that once you get through it, you can go like, it wasn't as bad as I'd imagined it would be. And it's not going to be as bad next time, even as it was this time.
Yeah, I can say, I know this question is not to me, but I just want to say that what you're saying, Ethan, I think is very true, because I just recently experienced this for myself. I would never, ever, 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 ever wear a bathing suit without shorts or a wrap or a something, like never, ever, from childhood, or maybe, yeah, like adolescence or something. And I just decided on a vacation with my husband, you know, a few months ago, I was just going to spend this one day at the beach with him, no shorts, you know, whatever, and just wore my bathing suit. And it was so hard, but I did it. And then I went on a birthday trip with a bunch of friends and like did that for 4 days. And it was crazy because there were boys there, you know, just like all the little things that were in my mind. But I just built on that one day and I did it for 4 more days. And I can say, wow, now as an adult, I've gone 5 days without shorts on over my bathing suit. And it was kind of like, you know what I mean? But then it wasn't so bad the next, you know, day three, day four. So it just takes a minute.
Yeah. Paige had no shorts on. I had my shirt off the entire trip because I was on one of these trips, not with her and her husband. Her husband was there when everybody was there, but you get what I'm saying.
That's true.
And everybody was just kind of like, you know, existing, and it wasn't so bad. And then the young, like super hot surfer dude showed up and all the girls went goggly eyed and me and the rest of the guys kind of slunk back to the background because like who wants to have their shirts off around those kind of dudes?
Well, not quite, but yeah. Well, I really glad that he asked us that question. Please let us know how it goes. You can always write in and tell us, you know, if you had some success with that or anything that you've figured out that helped you. And for anyone else out there who might have a question for Ethan, you can always email it to us at americanglutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.